thank you all for coming out on what is going to prove to be a bitter evening. First meeting of the year 2014. If you haven't done so, I think everybody has, but if you haven't done so, please sign the sign-in sheet before you leave tonight. Your packets of information should include the agenda for tonight's meeting as well as the minutes, and we'll call the meeting to order. We've already determined that we do have a quorum for the record. And if you would, please take a moment to review the minutes of the December 12, 2013 meeting. And we will entertain motions to accept the minutes as submitted or with correction.
Mr. Chair, I've already read these online, so I'm going to make the first motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting. And, I'm going to wait for a second, I guess.
All right. Mr. Mackey has made a motion.
Second.
Ms. Kessler is the second. Any discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor of accepting the December 12, 2013 minutes as submitted, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The minutes are accepted. We'll now move to staff reports. First item under staff reports is the financial progress report. It is in your packets, or should be, under attachment 3A. And Curtis will fill us in on additional information.
Yeah, and Mike, if it's okay, I'll just do all three of these, because they all kind of blend together, the financial, the technical progress, and the funds report. So for the financial progress report, it's actually the same as it was last month because we're at the year-end, calendar year-end, so we haven't closed our books or don't have the numbers yet for the official totals. At the same time, we also were on a city calendar year, but a ODOT fiscal year, which actually we're halfway through, and we've spent about 40% of our budget on planning. In terms of technical progress, we had awarded two planning grants back a few months ago, Barberton and Montrose area. Those two grants are expected to be under contract this month, so we're excited about getting started on those two work documents. We also are paying for a small feasibility study in Brimfield Township, looking at a trail connector from the Portage in Kent south to the reservoir down there. So we're helping fund that. And then we also received a generous grant from the Knight Foundation, who has really been impressed with the bike and brainstorms that we've done over the last 2 years. And they've given us money to have a bike symposium / conference, a one-day conference in this June. We're going to be trying to bring in The goal is to bring in speakers from other Midwest cities. We're looking at places like Minneapolis, Madison. Even though it will be the summer, we do want to bring people in that kind of have that cold weather exposure. And the idea is to bring in people that are like looking at former mayors or people that have helped, and like in the case of Madison, bringing Madison, making it a platinum bike-friendly city, things like that, what they did, why they did it, etc. So they're giving us funding to do that, as well as do two bike and brainstorms in the city of Akron. So we'll be doing those. One of them will do corresponding with the event, and one of them will do a few weeks later, probably in the Ward 3 area, which is near the zoo, and some of the other public housing over there. So we're really excited about that. It's a great opportunity for us to work with some partners and bring some people in. And we're also going to be encouraging the city to look at doing some, if anyone's familiar with pop-up infrastructure, in terms of trying some things on roads that are only there for a week or a month to see how well they work. And then, if they don't work, you can take them out. But we're talking about doing that around the time of the bike conference, that then we could have a bike and brainstorm where we would actually ride on whatever that was, whatever pop-up infrastructure we would put in. So we're thinking things like bike lanes, potentially, even on High Street, the mayor, whatever, allow us to do it for a week. But things like that. So we're looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. Finally, with the AMX federal funds report, I don't want to talk too much from the standpoint that the resolutions all tonight are about the awarding of funds for calendar or for the fiscal year 19 and 20, and 18, 19, and 20. But just a report, as many of you know, our CMAQ allocation was put into a statewide pot. We were then asked to create a statewide CMAQ program. That's for congestion mitigation air quality funds. We've done that with the other MPOs in the state of Ohio. We will be having our first round of funding. Probably the announcements, I think, will be in March, potentially March or April, and then the awards being at the end of the year. We're telling all of our communities that they need to be on the lookout because there is going to be $60 million pot available for local communities for projects that reduce congestion and also mitigate air quality. That's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We have as information, the fiscal year that we use is not the strict calendar year.
Correct. The fiscal year is July 1st to June 30th, and that's ODOT's fiscal year. And we have to mirror that, but technically we're part of the city of Akron, so we also do a budget. We actually have two budgets in our agency, one for the calendar and one for the fiscal.
Well, the $60 million pot, you're saying the projects will be approved at the end of
calendar year 14. Yeah, sorry.
Why the discrepancy?
Well, the biggest reason is, I mean, technically they'll be awarded in fiscal year 15, but the reason that it's going to take that long is the projects are for, we're talking about years 19 and 20 out years, and the idea is that we're giving everyone a chance to, since it's the first time we're running this process, you know, we're going to take slow time to grade on all the projects, meet with all the other MPOs, so we're just trying to build in a lot of time to the process so that it doesn't get too clunky, but we definitely are concerned that it will get clunky.
Does anybody else have any questions, Mr.
Mann? Several. You say we're at 40%, and you just told me it's July, so we've expended 5 months of the fiscal year. Doing the math, okay, we're at 40% of the year. Mm-hmm. Maybe after November 30th, you could put that in there, you know, 40% FY elapsed or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you give us a number, we can quickly look at that. Mm-hmm. Figure out 12 into 108.5%.
I'm sorry. Do you mean like where we have the grand total AMATS budget on the bottom?
Yeah, and it's 40% a year. Each year, each month, it would go up.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And then we can look at 40% and see.
Oh, you're saying like a month to month?
Yeah, you'd up it each month.
That's what we do with these. Like next month, it'll say
50% maybe.
Yeah,
it's not. It's not. You're not giving me the total of last year. You're telling me what you've expended against the year. Right?
Mm-hmm. And what do you want?
That you just, at the end of July, the top of the header would say 30 July, 8.5%. That's 1/12 of the year.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And the next month it would be 17%, 2 months of that. So that's your calendar against which you're putting. Your 40% doesn't tell me anything until I know what it's applied against. If I'm on a regular calendar basis and I say it's January and I've expended 10% of my budget, only 8.5% of the year's gone by. I'm ahead of my year spending.
Right.
So with someone not doing the math, you don't. 40% means what compared to what?
I'm never bringing this report up again, Bill. I'm throwing it in the trash.
Well, it's just that I don't think the dollars are going to be spent on this.
No, I'm just saying, you're giving me a statistic. I've got to apply it against something. Mm-hmm. What am I applying that against? 40% of the year is gone. 40% of the budget is gone. Actually, more than 40%.
Well, 40% of the budget's gone through November.
Yeah.
Through 5 months.
All right. You're talking about this bike program. Of course, you've seen Kent is going to be doing the Zip bike program, maybe.
Is that like bike sharing program?
Yeah, bike sharing. It's called Zip Bikes.
Yeah.
When you bring a speaker in, is June the right time so you can plan for the year, or should it be in our annual get-together in October to reach more of the mayors? Who is the speaker going to be talking to? The TAC committee, the policy committee?
No, the speaker, we're actually going to hold an event that will probably be host to about 200 people.
Okay.
And it's going to be, I'm not sure exactly yet how we're going to do it. The idea is that we want engineers and planners and professionals to be coming to the event in terms of, and I think some of the local groups, but we want to try to make sure we get those people in. Summer is a lot better from the standpoint that, well, one, it's when the money is available, but two, we also are dealing with, I think, travel schedules. The idea is that we can pull people from Pittsburgh to Columbus to Toledo. And so I think summer for traveling, and then also to be able to bike on the roads, mm-hmm. it'll be a lot less weather averse than if we did it, say, either in April or in
October,
we'd be running a risk. And I think a big part of this is going to be getting people outside and actually riding on the road. So from a climate perspective, I think it's probably the best. I mean, and who knows? You shoot for the,
I see you're way over in the local cost quite a bit. Are we renting Quaker Square now for the policy committee and the TAC meeting?
Yeah, just like we were with the Martin Center, yeah.
All right. So there's no change in the cost rent-wise?
No, in fact, you're talking about the AMATS local costs?
Oh, yeah, I forget where you're paying rent if you're renting halls or meeting places.
Yeah, that's it. But the real reason that is up, it was a one-time expenditure that we weren't able to code to a federal program, so it came out of our local mm-hmm. dollars. I can't remember what that expenditure was, but it wasn't related to the Martin Center and TAC. That's only $1,500 a year, I think. So,
yeah, I want to refer back to the policy committee minutes of the last meeting in December, talking about this Ohio Turnpike, 1 mile north and south. They have money available.
Mm-hmm.
Will that start showing up as added projects? If some, say, Boston Heights comes up with a project real quick, are we going to have to add something to the surface transportation program?
Probably not, unless it also uses federal funds. If it's all coming from that turnpike bonded stuff. If it's all coming pure mm-hmm. from the bonded turnpike, mm-hmm. we won't have to, the state doesn't even have to tell us about it. Unless they're doing some kind of major widening project, but I don't think that's what the intent of that program
well,
is.
Well, any of their possible program add on to the NEO-SCC programs?
No.
In the bridge inspections, said it, FTA inspects rail bridges owned by Metro. Mr. Enty said the FRA conducts inspections. Federal Transportation Administration, what's the FRA?
Federal Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think that was for the railroad bridges.
Yeah, that was the railroad.
Yeah,
I just wondered about the different mm-hmm. calls that went from FTA to FRA and wasn't explained as to who really was what doing the inspecting.
Okay. The railroads in general are responsible for their own. The FRA oversees the program. And then Mr. Enty, it's probably covered in the minutes, commented about that they have to inspect their bridges that they own.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on the staff reports? All right. Hearing none, we'll move forward. Under item 4, old business, doesn't seem to be anything there. So we'll move on to new business, and we have a very important document on the agenda is the fiscal year 2015 transportation planning work program and budget. Now, before we totally leave item 3 under where it says financial progress report, is asking for a motion. Is there in fact a motion needed?
No.
On that? No. Okay. All right. So then, okay, we'll move on to number 5 and. In your packets, it's attachment 5A, extensive maps and detailed information, and Curtis will further give us some information on that subject.
All right, so 5A is basically, this gets back into Mike, what we were talking about with the fiscal year versus the calendar year. Technically, we're already halfway through fiscal year 2014, and so we're actually planning for fiscal year 2015, which starts this summer. So the first thing that we do, because we receive about $1.1 million in federal funds every year, we have to show ODOT and FHWA how we intend to spend those funds, and that's what our work program does. And so this is the first draft of our work program, where it kind of shows the amount of money in our budget, what we're expecting in terms of funds, and what we're kind of thinking the major work products will be. If any of you do remember, eventually this comes up in May, and we actually have a resolution and our committees vote on approving the work program. So the point of this document is the first draft, where we get community input in terms of maybe there are services or things that reports that they'd like us to do in that calendar year. Of course, it's always tricky because what we're talking about is after, you know, pretty much halfway through 2014 is when this will get started. So with that, like I said, about $1.1 million. We also use some planning money, or CMAQ money for planning, about $100,000. ODOT matches at 10%, and then the locals match at 10%, so we ask the locals to provide dues, which is about $154,860. The dues are the same as they were last year for communities. You'll see that on Table 1. And then we just talk about some of the work program items that we think we're going to be doing. Those include, we'll be starting a new TIP next year. We'll also be starting to do a lot of the data collection, working on our next plan, as well as we want to do a road diet analysis. So one of the things we want to do is, yeah, we want to make sure that the roads lose weight. The road diet, basically a road diet is you take four lanes, you change it to two lanes with a center turn. That's the purpose of a road diet.
Lane restructure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. No change to the physical roadway itself. We're talking about the paint. And one of the things that we want to do is take a high-level view at roads in our system that have the right ADT, where we could actually recommend that they be at least analyzed to be a road diet project. Akron's really taking the lead on this. If you've been on Copley Road, if you've seen the cycle track on South Street, I think they're looking at it in a couple other places. And it just seems like a really good, and a lot of times, I think they're going to do it on Talmadge Road. And I think a lot of times it's because when you're looking at the four-lane road, those two left turn, if you don't have a center turn lane, those two left lanes end up being almost like, you know, being function as a turn lane, but people are getting stuck behind them constantly, and there's rear ends and kind of. So the idea is when you have a lot of driveways, it's actually better to have two lane road with a center turn lane than a four lane road with no turn lane. And I think Akron's looking at doing that on Talmadge as well.
They did South Main Street.
Did they? Okay, yeah. So that's another example. And more communities are looking at it. It's, I think, can be really effective, not just from a standpoint that then you have more right-of-way to, say, put in a bike lane or a bus stop or whatever, but it also has a high safety improvement. So we really want to, as the regional agency, kind of take that 30,000-foot view, identify some of those corridors, and then kind of, you know, urge communities to do that as part of their projects, so when it's appropriate. So that's kind of one of the main things we want to work on. And then otherwise, you know, I think, Bill, you had mentioned NEO-SCC. They're really kind of closing up shop now, at least this version of them, this year. And so really what we're kind of saying is that, like, we're going to help promote whatever the final plan is, whatever, you know, is left, we'll help continue to support it and do what we can. But I think our commitment's going to be a lot less, just as they're kind of in that next phase where, you know, they might turn into a nonprofit, they might be more Cleveland-based, they might do whatever, but we kind of get the plan at the end of the day. So,
Curtis, if they're going to redesign traffic lanes, won't there be traffic signal changes needed also?
It kind of depends. You know, usually the signals are all based on warrant, you know, what's warranted. So in a lot of ways, if you're changing the lanes, there might be some signal changes needed if you, say, are adding a left turn lane, you know, like a protected left turn. But a signal can still function because you have the same ADT as you did before. It's just a slightly different lane configuration. So and in a lot of cases where this is happening, we were talking to Talmadge about it, you know, looking at Howe Road, where it's four lanes, concrete, kind of, especially before Northwest, where the roundabout is. It's sort of like in that area, there's a large stretch where they're having a lot of problems with people speeding into the roundabout, and it's looking at how can we kind of slow traffic down. You know, so it's not even a signal issue.
The reason I bring it up is, in my observation, is a lot of people don't understand how these center turn lanes work. They think it's just another spot for their car to weave around and speed around people making right turns, and they use it as a getaway lane to... So not to be sitting behind anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's dangerous. It's
dangerous. Collision situation.
Four lanes without a turn, center turn, tends to be more dangerous than a two lane with a center turn. But that's a concern. I mean, we have issues on Exchange Street where it's all one way traffic. There's four or five lanes, and you have people turning left from the second to left lane, cutting off the person to their left. You know, I mean, so there's things that you just, you know.
Would more signage help? So
they've added, I mean, that is an issue.
Five signs through left.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Signage tends to be one of those, like, you know, hardened target things that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I know with Akron, with that Exchange example, they're beating their head against a wall because they can't figure out how to get people to, and they're not sure what the visual is that's cueing them to cut off another lane.
I drive through Chapel Hill a lot. I'm going down Howe Road at night in the rain. You can't see the lane dividers.
Mm-hmm.
How often, on the interstates, on main highways, you have those little light reflectors?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can those be put on Howe Road coming up the intersections, even with those things buried in the road so you can see the arrow at night in rain? Or are they going to be plowed out during the snow time?
I think that is an issue. I think it depends on how they put them in. Mm-hmm. I mean, and really that's up to the local if they want them or not.
Decide they want to put them in.
That would actually be an interesting question for Tony.
Not a design standard that TAC could address?
I don't think it's something that would come in the manual as something that you have or have
on
not.
On the big highways to keep you from going in the shoulder and dividing the lane to the left.
Right.
How come it's not on major thoroughfares within our cities?
I'm not sure.
You guys have a manual of uniform traffic control devices back at the office, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's available online, too, but take a look at that. I'd be interested to know what the recommendation is.
And my guess is what you brought up about the plowing and other, like, little maintenance issue type things, and especially if they're narrower roads, narrower than the standard 12, which, you know, the interstate's a lot wider lanes than what some of these roads are. That could have a lot to do with why they don't.
The county stopped using, we pulled several out with our plows. So we weren't
really
expecting those at all in the project.
Yeah, so there you go.
Now this particular draft, do you indicate you need a motion on this?
Yeah, if the committee would be willing to give us just a motion of support, we would appreciate that.
It's called your attention also that the work program funding includes a substantial amount of money from Metro RTA and CARTA. Page 6 on the back. If we have no other questions, Mr. Mackey.
I think that's in 5A, your second page, you talk about the air quality advocacy. Now, I see in the paper that Cuyahoga and Stark failed their particulate size quantity EPA measurements. So I think it was 10 parts per million or a certain size, and they're above that. So Summit was below that. So what does that change, if anything, for the counties that pass the air pollution test?
It doesn't matter, especially we're tied to Cleveland. So we are in the same air quality non-attainment district as Cleveland, and that includes Lorain, Cuyahoga, Summit, Portage. Doesn't include Stark, but it's the... Yeah. And then I think it goes all the way to Ashtabula for the PM2.5. But yeah, they continue to lower the standard, and we continue to... Every time they lower it, we're in non-attainment again. So, you know, it's one of those... one of those things that's frustrating, because I think the reality is that all modeling shows that over time, the continuing, we've been talking about this for the last 8 years and longer, is that as the fleet turns over, that's the that's a big part of it. As power plants change, so I think all these things are going to happen. Sort of, but we're getting to the point now, not so much with PM, but with ozone, where we're starting to talk. We're getting down to ambient levels. And so there's not a whole lot further they can expect us to go in terms of kind of regulating these things.
I just wonder if it's freed up money, or do we now implement a new program?
Yeah, no, it's money that we're – and that falls into – that we get the CMAQ funds because we're in non-attainment, which is kind of interesting. So the Youngstown area actually made attainment and then at one point and then lost their funding. But then immediately were redesignated – the standard changed, and they fell back in, and they're getting the money again. So there are some, needless to say, there are some perks to having bad air quality. But the money that we receive from that now is all in that statewide program that we've been talking about.
Okay. If nobody has anything on this subject, we'll entertain motions on... the draft fiscal year 2015 transportation planning work program and budget. Mm-hmm. Ms. Kessler has made a motion to accept the document as submitted. Mr. Mackey is second. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of accepting the draft fiscal year 2015 transportation planning work program and budget, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and the draft fiscal year 2015 transportation planning work program and budget is accepted. Okay. Next on our agenda are the items under agenda item 6, resolutions. We have three tonight for our consideration: resolution 2014-01, 02, and 03. On the agenda, they are bundled. There are three separate series of items, projects under each of these resolutions. I'll just read them into the record very, very briefly. Resolution 2014-01. Calls for approving projects to be funded under the STP program and adding these projects to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2014 through 2017, Amendment Number 8. Resolution 2014-02, approving projects to be funded under the TAP program and adding these projects to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2014 through 2017, Amendment Number 9. And finally, Resolution 2014-03, approving projects to be funded under the resurfacing program and adding these projects to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2014-2017, Amendment Number 10. Attachment 6A in the packets includes all the projects contemplated under these amendments and resolutions, including a map of project recommendations and potential funding and the description of the projects. So, if anybody has any comments or questions, we'll entertain those at this time.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Mr. Wise. The surface transportation program listings, you have the accepted programs and you have programs that were not funded. It looks like, I can't really read the scores, but it looks like the scores for some of those not funded
scored higher than, yeah.
That's reasonable.
The big issue, we'll tackle, if we may, we'll tackle the STP questions. So if anybody else has STP questions, we'll tackle those first and maybe go program by program just to make it so we're not all flipping through all these pages at once. The big thing with the STP is that what we had around this time was that we had a number of projects that reapplied for funding that at we had already had in the pipeline. And what we did first was we scored all the projects like there was no, just a pure base scoring, and that's what gave you the total score. Then when we looked at it with our TAC TIP subcommittee, the discussion was, a lot of these projects we'd already put committed funding to. What do we do about those? And the decision was made that, which that's the passive voice, so I should say the staff made the decision along with the TAC TIP subcommittee that we recommend funding all the existing projects that existed at 80% of what they asked for, and that gave us enough to fund two new projects that didn't exist in the pipeline before. That's the State Route 59 rerouting, as well as, I can't even remember what the other project is. What was the other new one? The Summit County Engineer Project, State Canton Road and State Route 91. So what we did is we funded everything at 80% that was existing, and then that gave us money to fund these two new projects that weren't in the pipeline before. This was brought up at our TAC meeting because some of the communities that were in that top 10 in terms of raw scoring wanted to know why they weren't getting funded. I think the reality is that there just wasn't enough money to fund all the projects, but the bigger concern for the staff is that once you've kind of committed to a project and you've put the federal dollars into it, you need to make sure that it gets all the way through. And so usually we had maybe two or three reapplies of projects that we had in the pipeline, and this time we just had, I think, 8, 9, 10 of them. So we decided to kind of broad brush it with the 80%. And so that was a policy decision. The TAC approved it. It will be discussed at policy committee because there are, I think, it's just one of those situations where it's great if you had an existing project and you get the 80%, but it stinks if you were ranked number 7 and you could have got funded, but you're not getting funded because, and I guess in fairness, the other argument is that with these projects that were existing, the last time we scored projects, they did score, and they were the top projects, so now we kind of have to see them through. Does that make sense, pretty much? I mean, might disagree with it, but at least that's the rationale.
No, I just was curious as to what your opinion was.
And I think it works out well. I mean, there are a couple projects that, that were, I know the staff's really excited about in terms of that we see our real issues. That Streetsboro project, the last one, the flooding issue, that, is basically, I think it's gotten better since they resurfaced it, but I think the 2 or 3 years ago it had closed almost 20 times. Getting a good 30-year fix in for that project we think is really important. It's not going to fix it forever, and it's going to sink again because it's all peat. But it's, those types of projects are ones that traditionally don't score very well because it doesn't have the ADT and things like that, but we see them being really important projects regardless. So that's that. Does anybody have any other questions on the STP part, Mr. Mackey?
Project 29, Cleveland Maslin Road widening. The last page of the STP. And Hines Hill rail grade separation.
Yes.
They're about $6 million each, and you said we had $12 million left over, and we can't plug $12 million in there and knock these two off the road.
No, we don't have. We don't have $12 million.
But what was our money you said we had left over that we're going to farm out the other MPOs?
Oh, the $60 million.
$60 million.
Yeah, we had. We used to get an allocation for. It was roughly $10 million over 2 years for CMAQ. Now that's in a state pot. That's $60 million. The issue with, especially with the Cleveland Maslin Road, is that money's not eligible for that because it's a pure. Going from pure widening project,
no federal.
So it couldn't get any of that pot because it would have negative air quality impacts. so it wouldn't be eligible.
What about the, Heinz Hill?
The grade separation would be the same.
I thought there was something else here.
The one that actually has the best chance of getting funded through that program is Talmadge, the roundabout.
Which one?
It's number 21, Southeast Avenue roundabout. I'm sorry?
Page number?
Table 1.
Table 1, first page.
Yeah, sorry, these were kind of stapled awkwardly. At the first page, table 1.
I guess it technically would be page 4, but there's not a page number.
It's the brown colored one.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we've discussed with our communities is that, you know, we definitely want to submit a lot of applications to the statewide pool because we want to get our fair share, and hell, if we can get anybody else's share, we'll take that too. So, so we have identified, and we have a table in here too that where we've called out all the projects that are eligible for that money, mm-hmm. and we're going to be working with those communities to fund those.
These are just recommendations. They're not necessarily guaranteed funding.
At this point, their recommendations. Policy committee next week will make the final call. And once it was approved by TAC-TIP, approved by TAC, and now this is the public input, and then we'll do the policy committee next week.
Is there a separate funding for the railroad road separation program? Because I see number 38 in Hudson also has a grade separation at railroad. And Hines Hill is a grade separation. Can a railroad pay part of that, or are they not involved?
In this case, the Hines Hill one, that's a good question, because that's definitely an active... Well, I guess the other one's an active one, too. Yeah. The Oviatt one, what that really is Veterans Way. Mm-hmm. It's Veterans Way, too. It's building a bridge over it so they can have a second half of the bypass. Mm-hmm. It's basically a new road, which is one of the reasons it didn't score very well, because we just haven't prioritized new projects, or in terms of new capacity-adding projects. The other Hudson project, the Hines Hill, that one, you know, again, I don't think the rail, and I don't know, Dave, you have any thought? I don't think the railroad really cares what the what the automobile traffic is.
Well,
not enough to pay $6 million to put a bridge over there.
Yeah, we're not going to pay that, but so, it is a benefit to have those crossings closed. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the fact that Highland Road project is now completed.
Yeah.
Is open, and it's one less crossing. We have to blow for one less crossing to run risk, and with mm-hmm. The siding there and the IDS steel factory there, it's a lot better for motors too, because we often did block that crossing historically when we were spotting the loads for IDS. Yeah.
The railroads aren't jumping to pay for new separations.
Essentially.
Got
Hines Hill and the other Macedonia road up there. Those two closed,
and
they're almost the sealed corridor.
Yeah. And I think the issue with Hines Hill, probably that it doesn't score well in any funding, is that the ADT is just the average traffic on Hines Hill is relatively low. We still have grade separation issues throughout the state that are far outweigh what's at Hines Hill. And I think a lot of that actually is economic development driven in Hudson, is because there is a lot of property out there that they could potentially develop. So I think they'd like the idea of... I don't think it's as big of a safety. I mean, it's always a safety issue, but I don't think we've had, you know, if there was a fatality out there, there'd probably be a bridge.
That's the other road you were speaking of. That's that new bypass they built south of downtown, so you can avoid that into the 91.
Yeah, and this would be, if you can visualize where the Starbucks is in Hudson, where the road, where that Veterans ends, or it kind of pulls right into this, that road would continue back over the railroad bridge and then connect into Oviatt and then to 303.
Back to 303.
Yeah, so it would be the half
the other side.
Yeah, this way, I guess, depending on how
you're looking. So there'll be a way you can make a left turn off.
Well, there would be, but we're not funding it, and I don't think...
And Hudson's not going to come up with the money for it.
No, although the first one, they did come up with most of them, but they got an earmark, and then, earmarks are kind of... They're a bad word now, but people are starting to speculate that they're going to come back in different type. You know, they're not going to be called earmarks anymore, but they're going to exist.
It's still pork.
Yeah.
I'll have a comment about the trust fund.
Any other questions on the STP aspect?
That's surface transportation program money is typically used for resurfacing of roads and new construction, or both?
It's typically in our region, we use STP to basically do any it's the most flexible of all our funding. Mm-hmm. So we can use it for anything. So typically it goes towards reconstructing roads, adding turn lanes, adding new lanes, through lanes. It's eligible to build new roads, but like I said, it doesn't score well. But then what we do is we take a portion of our STP, and that turns into the resurfacing program. And so that's table three, and that talks about, and that's taking about, I can't remember, $4-6 million, mm-hmm. chopped it off of STP and used that purely for pure mill and fill resurfacing.
And then now the next one we're going to is the transportation alternatives, includes mostly money for sidewalk trail.
Yes.
Bike
transportation alternatives can only be used for enhancing bike ped issue or bike ped infrastructure. We're excited about these projects. I think we have so many great projects, and this pot of money is by far our smallest. So one of the things we did with this pot of money is we over-programmed a little bit. We committed the projects that we don't fully have funding for throughout 2020. The idea is, though, is that if for some reason we did actually, all those projects were happened, we would just start to go into 2021, or a project would get delayed, but it would still happen. Summit Street, one of the things we did do is that we have a cap of 700,000, but we asked all the communities with 700,000 that we basically made the cap 500,000 for this round, because we wanted to get more of these smaller projects that we could potentially fund. Mm-hmm. So Summit Street, obviously, that's a big project. Freedom Trail, we're glad we were able to put more money into that. The Veterans Trail, Phase 1 in Hudson, is another trail we'll be helping to fund. But then we also have some really other, I think, positive projects that really are looking at building sidewalks where there's also transit connections. Green, two of their projects are both specifically building sidewalks in areas where, you know, they know they've got their bus routes and they see people walking, and it's a safety issue. And it's a big help to transit. So we're really excited about those projects as well. And then, obviously, I think the other one that might interest some people is in Stowe. We're doing bike lanes on Springdale, which is where the actual bike and hike paved portion, dedicated lane, ends, and then it weaves, the bike route weaves through Silver Lake and Stowe. This is providing bike lanes on probably the busiest road that connects that from where it stops to where the bike route goes through the neighborhoods. So that's a really cool project as well. So I think overall we've got some really cool things happening here, and be excited to see them actually take place.
I have a question. The Summit Street project in Kent. Mm-hmm. I know when I was still in Kent for college, they were talking about rebuilding Summit Street through their roundabouts and then.
Still doing it.
Still
this
doing
is going to be an added component to that.
Okay.
I think that project's expected to sell in 2016.
Okay.
So it's gotten delayed a couple times because it's a big project. Yeah. But, this is part of that to help fund some of the bike ped infrastructure, so bike lanes and sidewalks.
Well, I think that the work that AMATS has done using GIS to map all the sidewalks, any lack of sidewalks and mm-hmm. bike paths. Glad to see we have an active program to finally hook things together.
Yeah.
Where people can go out and enjoy their neighborhood without mm-hmm. having to walk in the streets.
And I think one thing that's, interesting, especially this committee, we've been talking a lot about bike and ped and land use the past couple years and the Connecting Communities Initiative, and this is the first round of funding where we've really been able to take a lot of those ideas and recommendations mm-hmm. and recommend and fund projects. So I think we're pretty excited. The last round was all trails, and this is a lot more of a mix of trails, but also on-road biking and pedestrians. So I think for us it's pretty exciting because we're actually putting money towards a lot of the plans and ideas we've talked about for a while.
And I think, too, the commitment that a lot of the community has made to transit in terms of understanding where their routes were and mm-hmm. really thinking about where some of these sidewalks should go, I think was a neat thing to see, because we haven't seen that kind of coordination before. So that's another positive that I think came out of this.
Would there be a chance that the non-approved ones, 12 through 26, might be done in the next several years then, or are they much further down the road?
Yeah, probably not till after 2020. I mean, there are a couple, you know, Hudson's been really aggressive with different funding sources, not just ours. Streetsboro is, you know, they had a lot of good sidewalk projects, but, you know, they just didn't quite score as well. I think the Wyoga Lake Road one could potentially happen without our funding, potentially. But we'll have to see with their new administration, and, you know, you never know. We've yet to meet the new mayor. We're going to do that in a couple weeks. So some of them, there were only maybe one or two trails that we just didn't feel were things that we should be funding as an agency or things that are our priorities. Some of, like, the Safe Routes to Schools from Aurora was sort of like this various small little, you know, we're going to connect this walking path to this walking path behind the school. And it just didn't have that regional component that we thought we really needed. And the same with that Metro Parks Hardy Road Trail. It's making a connection, but it's not a high-density area. There's not a lot of population, and mm-hmm. we think it's a great trail, but we just didn't want to fund it, I think, with what we kind of are charged with. So, but I like Krista said, I mean, and we got more applications for sidewalks and for bike lanes that we've ever seen. I mean, it tripled this year, so that's really cool.
The source of all this money is federal mm-hmm. trust fund money, or is this...
Yeah, this TAP is part of the trust fund.
It is part of the trust fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It used to be you got STP and then you just took 10% of that, and 10% of your STP had to be towards transportation alternatives. Now it's actually like a dedicated funding source. It's not even the 10%, but it is funded through the gas tax.
Okay, and then one final. In Victor's presentation today, mm-hmm. he showed a pie chart of the division of the funding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be great that we could see that. Could you get a copy of that?
It's usually an email.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sent out as an email. Mm-hmm.
Is everybody, we'll send it to the whole
CIC. I got the numbers here because somebody asked a question of that and it got put back up on the screen. To break down the money, as Victor showed in his PowerPoint presentation, I thought we might get to see that again tonight. 14% of the money went for pedestrian, bike improvements to sidewalks and trails, 14%. 24% was for preservation. Mm-hmm. That was for resurfacing.
That was a pure resurfacing.
Okay. Yeah. And then 12% is capacity. That's lanes and signals, usually.
That's just, capacity is pure adding lanes and not even turn lanes, just regular lanes. So that, I think the only, I'm not sure if it's the only project, but green... on the STP, their project, they're getting like $4 million. I think that's the main capacity-added project.
And then 50% was operational, but I wasn't to speak there. What is operational?
Operational is traffic signals, turn lanes, reconstruction. So anything that would add a center turn lane, anything that would add a right turn lane, left turn lane, change signal timings, replace signals, those are all considered operational. Even road, like we were talking about, road diets would actually be considered operational.
Okay.
That's kind of our general catch-all. You know, if it's not adding a lane and it's not a bike ped, usually it's an operation, and it's not preservation, it's an operational project.
Okay. Preservation resurfacing. We might add that if you reuse that pie chart. I know that meeting at TAC is very oriented towards the engineering type, which I have some association with the terms mm-hmm. and such, but I think having these other words as to how the money is spent, it might be helpful for the policy, because those mm-hmm. guys aren't quite as well polished with their engineering skills.
Yeah, we sometimes have to remind the engineers to stop being engineers, but it's tough.
Yeah, well, Victor is a
engineer. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that was just one question. I was going to ask him tonight if he was here to bring a copy of it, but if he could just bounce.
Yeah, we can send it to you. We can email it to everybody.
All right. Well, we have three resolutions to deal with tonight, and as is our custom, we will gladly entertain motions either separately or bundling them together.
I'm sorry, Mike. Did we have any questions on the resurfacing program, the third table?
Just one.
Yeah.
As I would like to bring up, because of all the biking stuff, do any of those resurfacing projects include lane markings for bikes? Or?
You know, they can at this point. We just don't, you know, it's so early on in the process, we don't know. If the community finds that there's the right of way, you know, sometimes they take advantage of it. Hudson paid an extra $400,200 for Stowe Road to get the extra width that they needed when they were doing a project. So it just, at this point, it depends. We've talked about that internally. Mm-hmm. Should we put some sort of have to, you know, but the issue is at this point, we just don't have the detailed information as to how much right of way is available and what they really could pull off unless they went to substandard lanes, and you're not allowed to do that.
It could be added at some point if you...
Right, right, and that's one thing that I think in the... You know, because we always say, like, that's the best time to restripe is when you put down a new, you know. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking internally about, is there a check and balance we can do to make sure that when it gets a little closer, we can say, hey, did you think about turn lanes? But, bike lanes or restriping. We're just not quite there yet.
One thing we do do is, as the projects move forward, we are involved in kind of just keeping up on the scope of the project. So I think there is some room, like, in the next couple months, we can really look at, you know, once the projects are approved, look at those and see if there's any that we really feel strongly, you know, that line up with our plans, and, you know, maybe reach out to those communities specifically is one thing to...
One of the hardest things, I think, is just, you know, you can pull up a GIS map or an auditor's map, and you'll see the yellow lines, and you think you know the boundaries. Those can be off by, like, 3 to 6 feet, so... saying, like, oh, there's enough room at our level of view. Until we had, like, a surveyor go out there, you really don't know. And so that's why we've been, like, a little bit hesitant to kind of be like, oh, that's the perfect road for a bike lane.
Okay, I went to several of the bike meetings early back when. The bikers seem to think, bicyclists, seem to think that a 6-foot-wide bike lane was sufficient to bike on. Now, I'm thinking... Two 12-foot lanes for north-south traffic on Hudson Drive going Cargo Falls to Stowe to Hudson. Mm-hmm. Now you had 6 foot on each side, or are you just going to put 6 feet on one side for a marked bike lane?
It would all depend, and locally, I mean, communities can do 4 foot, 5 foot, or 6 foot. But I mean, well, hell, they could do 3, but, I mean, with that, it ends up being more like a wide shoulder.
Yeah.
But it's really in those, if they're not using our money, they can really make a bike lane as wide as they want. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of these restriping.
You go up Hudson Drive, if you have a flat tire, you're not going to pull off the roadway. There's no room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 6 foot would at least give you mostly to be off the roadway.
I would say it's like 3 foot on there, because I just ride that all the time.
Yeah. Any side area.
But 3 foot will actually be a decent for bike riding.
Right.
Not under heavy traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have 5 or 6 lanes. Yeah. 6 feet when you're on something like 303. So, give me anything.
Yeah, true.
Just don't make me ride out on the road.
But some of the roads don't even have, like we're used to on interstates, a good safety brake
down. Right. And that's what we have got. And when we were talking about that road diet analysis, that's where you start to do that 30,000 foot analysis. That road might not be a good candidate, you know, to do that. And then we'll look at alternatives. But I think that's sort of the process we want to go through with our communities, is just to think about all those things, because there are some roads that we know for sure in our system that don't still need to be 4 lanes. Just the ADTs of, you know, we're not 1970 anymore, and so some of the infrastructure is just overbuilt. Mm-hmm. But
well, same thing, looking up the history of roundabouts from way back when. Of course, the most notorious one is the Champs Élysées in Paris.
Yeah.
But it's a roundabout, and it works. You get a lot of vehicles going through it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it gets rid of lights, and traffic moves a lot smoother. So, again, with bike lanes on one side, get rid of the stoplights, and put in a roundabout. Traffic moves a lot faster. You can get around town. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I move that we combine resolutions 2014-01, 02, and 03 for a motion.
Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Mackey, second from Mr. Dustin Baker, to bundle together the resolutions 2014-01, 2014-02, and 2014-03. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all is in favor of so bundling these three resolutions, 2014-01, 2014-02, 2014-03, please indicate approval by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The resolutions are approved. We now move to other business. This is typically the part of the meeting where we open the floor. We have a previous request from Mr. Mangold, the chair, to briefly go over some material that he has obtained in his recent travels. And for all our mutual benefits, he would like to present it at this time. We'll be there in 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Let me know if I exceed my, or I'm almost exceeding my limits. Last week I had the opportunity to attend the Transportation Research Board meeting. Rather than going into great detail, I'll just pass around the book from that huge meeting. Thousands of presentations and sessions were going on. Covers all aspects of transportation. Basically, it's Congress's way of spending your tax money on transportation research. One of the biggest things the various committees do, here's some information about the freight committees that I'm on, is put together research need statements on what needs to be done to fix highway or transportation problems. One of the projects I worked on was the future locomotive cab. They handle rail issues, marine, air, it's all included. To get an idea of some of the displays and information that was going on, I've included some books across the counter there. Those are not free for the taking. You can check them out for me and then bring them back at a future meeting. That would be appreciative. Issues of transportation sustainability. Even our great friends, the EPA, was there with the display booth. And then lots of engineering and lots of technical reports available for sale for the planners and the engineers. Lots of upcoming meetings. I'll be getting a list to the staff on issues such as critical transportation infrastructure, international meetings on transportation research going on in Paris, France. I won't be going to that one. One of the joint meetings coming up on rail is the Joint Rail Conference. I'll be presenting some papers there. That's always quite interesting. You can send that around if you're interested. The FRA was there with a big display and their strategic plan. You might take a look at that brochure. I found the APTA display to be quite interesting, and they provided a booklet on new rail transit partnerships and how that improves convention activities. I got all kinds of neat charts and graphs. I definitely need this back. Basically, those cities that are called rail cities have better attendance at larger conventions and commerce of tourism. And we had our chance to do that here more than a decade ago, and we're not a rail city, so we're not in that. Our good friends from the South Coast Air Quality Management District were there with a huge amount of sessions and activities on air quality. That's out of California. They always kind of cover everything first. So I'll pass these around. I must say, this is one of our locomotives, but that thing's smoking, and they don't normally always look that bad. I wonder if there isn't some sort of enhancement here. But they really get into things in great detail, but they also come up with solutions. They're looking at battery-powered and electrified trucks, and, of course, my favorite, rail. So the Department of Energy was there. Some of the companies building these new battery-powered systems were there, as well as the locomotive builders, EMD and Siemens, were all there. So you can take a look at those And I'm sure they have some websites and such that you can easily visit and learn more about. And probably, as I'm probably almost running out of time, I want to hit a few highlights that the Secretary of Transportation had to say at the luncheon on Wednesday, kind of a wrap-up session. Anthony Fox, as you know, is the former mayor of Charlotte. He's an up-through-the-ranks politician, from an attorney, a law clerk, a city council, and then mayor, and then was selected to be the next secretary following Mr. LaHood, only the second transportation secretary under the Obama administration. So a couple highlights from his speech here. It was noted that his city is a rail city with a very expanded light rail line. I've had a chance to see it. He's a parent of two. His one daughter provided a list of airplane improvements. It was quite comical. One of his main features of the speech is his priorities for his service as Secretary of Transportation. And that is that there's been no six-year authorization for multiple years. And that time is money. There's a serious cost of waiting. He wants to move forward with a bipartisan, sustainable investment in transportation infrastructure. He noted that this highway trust fund will begin bouncing checks in August. A lot of you have heard that in the media, and I think we're going to get a lot more attention in that in the near future. There's a lot of bills at work in Congress, and he's urging all of us, the TRB members, and I'm urging you, communicate with your legislatures. We don't want to get into a critical situation in the month of August with the trust fund actually bouncing checks. So we need to get this reauthorized or whatever we have to do to get through the fiscal year, which for the federal government actually begins October 1st. We won't be able to spend our way out of this, is one of the comments he made. One of the highlights he made is that there's a new engineering thing. Maybe Victor knows something about this. Warm mix asphalt instead of hot mix asphalt. Have you guys heard anything about this at the office?
No.
That's a real big push to this for a huge energy savings at the asphalt plants, not having to heat the asphalt at these high temperatures. And he wants to find efficiencies, how we can get more projects done faster. As he said, time is money. We need to develop a better intermodal system. I like hearing that because that includes rail. He talked about the national freight plan required by MAP 21. And then we also need a rail plan. Highway projects have a major impact on communities. I think we all agree with that. And for some of the improvements regarding safety, he had a big wrap-up session on safety. And we're in a world of trouble in the railroad industry with moving the Balkan crude oil. As you probably heard, there was a terrible accident in North Dakota. Now, just last week, the incident in Philadelphia. And he had already convened a meeting last week of the petroleum leaders and the rail leaders. And I've heard some of the comments that may have come from that. It's not good for the railroad industry, but hopefully it'll make things more safe for moving along. In the interest of our group here, kind of one of the wrap-ups was he's going to have a strong push for pedestrian and bicycle improvements. And the reason for that is when Mr. Fox was a boy riding his bike in urban Charlotte, he was actually hit by a car. So this is near and dear to him to make these pedestrian improvements. So I can almost bet in the next reauthorization there will certainly be some improvements there for bike lanes and pedestrian improvements because it's near and dear to him, having been a child. Apparently it wasn't serious. He's kind of a big guy, if you haven't met him. Uh-oh, have I exceeded my five? And the joke was you should see the car. But really, apparently this did happen. So Deborah Butler, the vice chair of the Transportation Research Board, wrapped up and made a comment again about warm mix asphalt. Apparently this is the next big thing.
Could we have a comment on that in the next meeting?
Yeah,
I'm assuming there's a load of asphalt load, big trucks.
how much does it cost to heat it to 150 degrees, and how much does it cost to heat it to 100 degrees?
Right. I mean, and I would say, even talking internally to our staff, you know, since we're not really doing the, we'd probably have to reach outside of our organization.
Well, delegate it to Akron Street Department or Chicago Falls.
Yeah, ask them if they know anything about it. They didn't give the exact temperature.
What are they paying for a load if it's 150 degrees, if a load is 100 degrees?
I worked next to an asphalt plant, and you could see those big gas furnaces going and all the steam and energy being spewed away to heat that asphalt up to the high temperature. Because it actually has to arrive at the paver at a certain temperature threshold in order to get everything to roll and stick together.
I think it's all, too, about what the state says. That the, the cities will only use what the state kind of classifies as appropriate mixtures. So it probably, you know, I'm sure we can find out if there's anything like that on our list.
Any more details about this speech? I was sitting right next to the Journal of Commerce reporter. I haven't tried to do a Google search to find it, but he was taking notes faster than me. Said it was going to be up online yet that afternoon. So please take a look at the documents there that I kind of picked out as kind of significant, and I'll be happy to talk to you more about it. TRV.org online, and you can read a lot of stuff about the meetings. You have to actually pay for the right to see the abstracts and see the technical reports and the PowerPoint presentations, but I can get that for you if you're really that interested. It's quite a unique meeting, I must say.
And how often do they have that?
It's a yearly annual meeting, but most of the committees have what we call a mid-year meeting or some sort of function. If you're interested in rail, we're going to have a rail mid-year meeting over in Altoona, and the various highways all have meetings throughout the United States. And the mid-year is anywhere from like May through August usually, because at that point we're starting to work on the session planning for the winter annual meeting in Washington, D.C. It's always held in Washington, D.C.
All right. Well, we'll move along and let the others have an opportunity to comment as well. But I just want to say that Mr. Mangold goes to a great degree of personal effort and expense and time to follow the industry of transportation, and he does a great job. I know what it is to have a job on the railroad. Your time is not always your own, and somehow he makes the time to go ahead and keep updated and keep us updated on what's going on. So thanks to Dave for doing that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to go around the table now and give everybody time to have any comments, further questions, whatever. Mr. Bowley.
No comments over what we discussed, but where are we with Sleeper D? I'm hearing some discussions about making it part of the interstate system. That's something that's being rumored.
Yeah, there's been some discussion. I think it all stemmed from some of the northern Summit County mayors. They approached our agency, and our director was pretty vocal about advocating for it to potentially become part of the interstate system. Mm-hmm. You know, we had written a request to ODOT. ODOT hasn't really given us a formal response. You know, I think there's a lot of interest in it. I'm not sure where it'll go at this point.
Not that easy just to add the
mileage. No, it's moving mountains. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Mr. Paul Baker.
Yes.
Have you been to a meeting before?
No, sir.
This is your first meeting?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Any comments, questions?
Not tonight.
Okay, well, we'll hope to see you again, okay? Mr. Mackey, anything further?
I went to the TAC meeting today and gave Mr. Segedy a small bulletin sheet. Also gave one to the AMET staff who was there. Mr. Mangold may be able to help me here.
Uh-oh.
The area under discussion for me is, and if you're familiar with Cuyahoga Falls, you go down Broad Avenue to the river, and you go under Route 8, over a double railroad set, and you have a very small section of Talmadge Avenue near the light, and the current Schwebel's company sits on the corner. That used to be the Lawson's company, used to be a tire plant. Traffic in the left lane, turning left, is minimal. There's never any problem. Traffic in the right lane is always backed up because people are either going what we call in Cuyahoga Falls, Talmadge Avenue, down at Barney's Busy Corners, or they're turning right on Newberry to go down to the Chapel Hill area. And I was told by my city engineer that that intersection for traffic accidents is number 6 in the state.
Wow.
And the engineer, in fact, told me one day he had just crossed the tracks, and got stopped. The gates came down, and the guy behind him was on his bumper and could not get out of the way, jumped out of his car, and in his rearview mirror, he saw the train take the car away.
Whoa.
There have been numerous accidents at that. And what I am proposing, and this has to go into Cuyahoga Falls, already talked to their planning commission, that they buy the first section of that plant right at the intersection. I mean, it's the old-fashioned building right up to the edge of the sidewalk. And make a right turn lane that joins Newberry about 100 feet to the south. So you could exit that, go around that intersection and not back it up. You'd get more vehicles through that, especially when a train comes and the Broad Boulevard south backs up, people waiting to get off and go under Route 8 and go east. People coming down Broad Avenue from the west side of town to go east. People coming Route 8 north that want to turn right and go to the east. That we get more vehicles through that intersection and try to deconflict the number of vehicles that are sitting on the tracks when the gates come down. Mm-hmm. This is just the first blush at it, but I wanted to bring it up as a concerned citizen. Thank you.
Maybe easy to do. Swables is closing.
They're closing.
Bakery.
And I believe the building is for sale. I don't know if Cuyahoga Falls wants to buy the whole thing, or if somebody wants to buy it and tear it down, get rid of, I don't know, asbestos. I don't know what else is in there. But take the triangle right there and turn it into a right turn lane to get traffic through there. I've been through there, and half the cars go down Challenge Avenue, and half of them turn to the right and go down to the Chapel Hill Mall. So
yeah, I recently went through there. I'll have to go through there again.
Under the congestion mitigation program, too, by the way. Too.
Yeah. Improve the air quality in Cuyahoga Falls.
All right, Mr. Kish,
may I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes.
Oh, 8 o'clock.
I guess going back to Cuyahoga Falls, because I live out there now, I travel through State Road,
yep.
Where they're building the new porch crossing or whatever, but
yeah.
I don't know what their plan, or if they know the plan from like Bath Road up to Graham and beyond, if they're going to expand that.
That will be a 2-year program. I'm out to there, I've been to their meetings, it'll go through 2014, maybe 2015. But they are doing some winter work, surprisingly, even at this temperature.
Yeah, they're out there working on it.
Well, sometimes people shut down, the contractors have to shut down, but they are getting permission to go ahead and do work. So they're hoping that, as opposed to the fall of 2015, maybe it'll be the spring of 2015 when it's widened. Again, it'll be bigger lanes, side lanes, bike lanes, jogging lanes, left turn in the middle, new signs, new traffic, but it's going to be configured. Right now, it's programmed to run 24.
It's actually starting at Quick Road.
Yeah, it goes from my end, from Graham Road to Quick Road. Either way, it's that whole section in there, all right? They're going to redo part of the Steeles Corner intersection.
Okay. Mr. Wise, anything?
No further comments.
Ms. Kessler? Dave?
I think I've exceeded my time.
Dustin Baker, it is? Okay. We would just again like to thank you for coming out on a winter's night and participating in the discussion. And of course, welcome. You haven't been here before. And we hope to see you again. Our next meeting is the meeting on March 13th. Again, 6:30. That's a Thursday. Right here in this room, and we hope you can make that meeting in the rest of our 2014 series. So, unless anybody has anything else, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn at this time. Discussion? Mr. Mackey is the second. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Hearing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, we are adjourned.